the actor Alec Baldwin is speaking out for the first time about the death of cinematographer Helena Hutchins, who was shot on the set of the film Rust in late October. In last night's exclusive interview with ABC News anchor George Stephanopoulos, Baldwin said he did not pull the trigger of the gun that killed Hutchins while they were rehearsing a scene.
I let go of the hammer of the gun, the gun goes off.
At the moment. The decisive
that was the moment the gun went off, yeah. That was the moment the gun went off.
It wasn't in the script for the trigger to be pulled.
Well, the trigger wasn't pulled. I didn't pull the trigger.
So no. You never pulled the trigger?
No. I would never point a gun at anyone and pull a trigger at them, never.
KPCC Entertainment reporter John Horn has been following this story from the very beginning, and he joins me now. John, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
And what did you take away from that interview, which was just remarkable at times?
It didn't feel like it got to the heart of the issue. The heart of the issue is, how did live ammunition get on the set of Rust? And listen, I'm not a gun expert. Alec Baldwin said he pulled the hammer back and released it. That's part of what pulling the trigger does, drawing back and releasing the hammer. So it might be a distinction without a difference. It's not as if the gun went off by itself. What's more, Baldwin's ABC interview is a little bit at odds with what he told investigators immediately after Hutchins was killed. According to a report released earlier this week by the Santa Fe Sheriff's Office, an officer who arrived at the site right after the fatal gunshot said, and I'm quoting here, that he was the one that fired the weapon. So a bullet was fired from that gun, and that bullet killed Helena Hutchins. So there was a live round of ammunition chambered in the gun, and when the trigger was pulled or the hammer was released, it fired the bullet that killed her.
Yeah, the criminal investigation is ongoing, of course. But, you know, why do you think Alec Baldwin would even give an interview right now? Do you think he did himself any favors?
Well, his lawyer probably didn't think it was a great idea. But I think what you're seeing now is a lot of people who are involved in the shooting saying, basically, it wasn't my fault. And that includes the assistant director, Dave Halls, who allegedly said the gun was a cold gun, meaning it didn't have ammunition in it. Hannah Gutierrez-Reed, the armor on the film, saying that she checked the guns, but maybe she didn't check them that closely. Then there's the whole question of, like, the bullets themselves, because the authorities, you might remember, said they recovered about 500 rounds of ammunition after the shooting from the set. Some were dummies, some were blanks. Dummies are bullets that look like bullets that don't fire, for like a close-up of a gun being loaded and actual live ammunition. So the central question is, how did live ammunition get on the set? I mean, I've talked to armorers, filmmakers, safety officers, and that's just like rule number one. You never, ever have live ammunition on a movie set.
Even Alec Baldwin said in the interview last night, the priority is now to figure out that very question. There are at least two lawsuits pending already. What happens next on that front, do you think?
Well, that's civil litigation that kind of moves at its own pace. I mean, I think the thing that most people are interested in is, will there be criminal charges? Now, the authorities said a couple of weeks ago that there was complacency on the set of Rust. The question is, at what point does that complacency go to the level of criminal negligence? And I think that's going to be the key question. And also, earlier this week, there was this story from the sheriff's department that the slugs might have come from Seth Kenny, who is a New Mexico weapons dealer, and he might have gotten reloaded ammunition in a bizarre twist from the father of Hannah Gutierrez-Reed, who is the kind of novice armor on Rust. So I think they're now basically doing, you know, the forensic analysis, or trying to trace the custodianship of the bullets to see where they came from, because there's no question that was a live round that killed Helena Hutchins.
All right. I'm talking with KPCC Entertainment reporter John Horn. And John, I do want to actually ask you about another topic, and that relates to the health of the movie industry in general. There was this new study out that polled pre-pandemic moviegoers, and almost half of the people who responded said that although they once went to cinemas, they no longer do so. How big of an issue is this for the movie industry?
Huge. Crisis level. And this is a line in the report that I was struck by, and I'm quoting it now. The good news is that 70% of all respondents, including those who aren't currently going to the movies, would be upset if theaters went away, meaning 30% wouldn't mind if theaters went away. So I don't take that as good news. I take that as really dire news. And something that's important to note is that theater admissions on a per capita basis, like how often the average American went to a movie theater, was declining even before the pandemic. And if you really think about it, the movie business hasn't changed in 100 years. If you want to see a movie at a theater, you have to go at a set time, at a set day, at a set location. That hasn't changed in a century, and the world has changed. So it's a little bit like, you know, the movie theater business is kind of horse and buggy in an era of electric vehicles and ride-sharing services. So I think the pandemic accelerated the shift. I mean, I was just looking at my cable bill right now. I get so many different streaming services, and yes, I pay a lot of money for them, but I can watch pretty much anything I want at home and not worry, A, about getting infected, and B, not have to go out of the house and deal with crowds.
What a culture shift happening right underneath our feet. I know you speak with directors, actors, people in the industry all the time. What are they saying about this?
Well, I think they're of two really torn minds. I think they want people to see their movies, and they make the movies to be seen in theaters. And a year ago, HBO made an announcement with its sister company, Warner Brothers, that all Warner Brothers movies would premiere day and date in theaters and on HBO Max. And there are a number of filmmakers who were a little unhappy about that. Christopher Nolan, probably the most important director, thought it was horrible. And Denis Villeneuve, the director of Dune, was equally upset. I mean, he said basically that Warner's had ruined the film because people were going to watch it on HBO Max rather than in a theater. And I talked to him about that issue, and here's what he had to say about it.
I think that you will miss the power of the score of Hans Zimmer that brings you in a new dimension, in a new world. I think that you will miss being absorbed by the power of the landscape. The way the movies was made, Dune was made, was using the language of the big screen. So watching it on a smaller screen is not the ideal way.
I have to agree 100%. I've seen this movie in a theater, and if you look closely, I mean, there's like Jacqueline West, who did the costume design, like the bead work, Craig Frazier's cinematography. Even if you have like a home stereo surround sound system, it's never going to match what happens in a theater with Hans Zimmer's score and the sound effects. So when you see a movie like Dune on your laptop or your TV, you're missing about 80% of the experience of seeing the film in a theater.
You know what? I hear that. I watched Dune from a couch in the living room, and it is a big movie. But I'll tell you what, I didn't get sick with COVID.
That is true.
When I
that
watched it. So going back to what this report was saying. Yeah, exactly. So going back to what this report was saying, you know, what are the ways to fix this problem? What are the ways to get people back into the theaters where they'd feel comfortable and adequately entertained?
Well, I think that's the fundamental dilemma. And the last question they asked in this study was about the experience. And almost all of them said to about 60 to 65, 68%, I would go more often if it felt more special. Now, I don't think they're talking about reclining seats and, you know, in theater dining. I think they're talking about it's not a unique experience anymore because you can see pretty much anything in a theater, maybe the same day, same week, maybe a month later at home, and they don't think it's as special as it used to be.
Tell you what, John, I went to the movies for the first time recently in 2 years. The theater was empty. The mall that it was in was empty. The stores were literally not there. They had closed.
You were not at the same mall I was at last week where you couldn't barely walk across it. What did you see?
I saw Ghostbusters and I liked it. But, you know, the experience was left something to be desired, I would say. So theaters are going to have to figure this out. John, real quick, before we let you go, give me a movie or two that you'd recommend going into the holiday season.
Don't Look Up, Adam McKay's movie about an asteroid on track to hit the Earth, but it's really about alternative facts and climate change, and then Power of the Dog, Jane Campion's adaptation of the great novel by Thomas Savage.
And people can watch that from their home on Netflix. I said it.
You're right.
It's true.
You're right.
John, thank you so much for your time. Have a great weekend.
My pleasure. Thank you.